Bibles, please, and turn to Genesis chapter 12. Genesis chapter 12. This morning I want to speak on the topic of facing the future with courage. Facing the future with courage. Back when Apollo 13 took off for the moonwalk, everything was working well when that space travel started. It wasn't too long afterwards that the voice was heard from Apollo 13. "Houston, we have a problem." There was an explosion on board Apollo 13. This was a very dangerous moment in the life of that space travel. Any wrong move momentarily could mean the end of the lives of those men. Now, the concentration of Houston was to get the members of that spaceship back on Earth to the destination that had been previously agreed on. How will this be done? For just a few moments, the lives of those astronauts were held in the hands of mortals on Earth in Houston, Texas. As I thought of that, I thought of our text this morning. God's call to Abraham to leave where he was. Apollo 13 knew where the destination was, the moon and back. But for Abraham, he did not know where. This morning, I want us to learn from his life how to face the future with courage. Because those men in that spaceship, the future looked bleak to them. They didn't know what was going to happen. When they would burst those thrusters, it would bring the ship that was off course, back in course to land on Earth again, to come back into Earth's atmosphere. One false move, and it was the end. Abraham was called by God in chapter 12 of Genesis to do something that God calls each and every one of us to do at one time or another. And we are asked to place our lives into the hands of God, who has the future totally known to him and under his control. The only thing is that when God calls us to do certain things, we do not necessarily know how. We do not necessarily know why. And like Abraham, we are called to do something that very few of us in this scientific, technological age know how to do. And we want to pursue that in the time allotted to us. I want you to see in our text God's call to the future. God's call to the future. It began back in Genesis chapter 11 and verse 27. When we get to Genesis chapter 12 and verse 1, you will note that the King James translation has the accurate word that God had said, not that he said. He had spoken before Genesis chapter 12, and it was back in chapter 11 that somewhere, somehow, sometime, suddenly, God spoke to Abraham, and he called him to do something. The scheme of this call is significant in that Abraham was still living in a pagan environment. Ur of the Chaldees was not one of the great Christian centers in history. Ur of the Chaldees, although a very wonderful, magnificent place, cosmopolitan, advanced in technology and science, arts, music. In fact, in my research, I found that Ur of the Chaldees, when they discovered tablets which describe what life was like back there were questions of trigonometry answered, discussed back there that Oxford and Cambridge students today are still graveling with. It was no mean place. But what was true also of Ur of the Chaldees is that it was the center of paganism and idolatry. Cruelty, the kind of cruelty that you and I would actually want to run and hide from today. It was in this scheme, it was in this setting, it was in this kind of environment, it was in a pagan environment that God burst through the paganism and the idolatry of Abraham's life, and he spoke to him. There's something very unique about this. If you look in the 7th chapter of the book of Acts, you don't need to turn there, but if you're taking notes, you can write it down. Acts chapter 7, it is said this, and it is very important. When Stephen was rehearsing the history of God in the lives of the people of Israel, he said to them, God, the God of glory, appeared to Abraham in Ur. God, the God of glory. You see, there's only one God of glory. And in the midst of all the pagan gods around, when God comes because he's the God of glory, he's distinct because of who he is. There is no other kind of small g gods that could be compared with the God of glory. No other God ever, ever was designated with that designation. What does it mean, the God of glory? The word glory has a number of meanings, but what it means here is the God out of whom the shining came. Every other god is a god of darkness. Every other god is the work of man's hands. And no man can ever create that which is greater than the Creator. And so the God of glory came. Abraham knew without a question in his mind that God was the God of glory who had appeared to him. And immediately, whatever communication took place between God and Abraham in the land of Ur, whatever it was, Abraham was so convinced that this was the true revelation of the God of the universe that God spoke to him in terms that baffled the mind to this very day. The scheme of this call, my friends, was all God's. It had nothing to do with Abraham. It had nothing to do with the place he was at. It had only to do with God. You see, because when God decides to move, he doesn't ask your permission or mine. He doesn't come down and say, now, can we do this? I was watching the Cosby Show some time ago, and his wife said something. And he said something else. And then he said, I would like to do this in my house. And she said, not in my kitchen. And he said, isn't it interesting? When we were buying it, it was our house. Now I want to do something, it's my kitchen. Well, even in our human relationships, everything we know, we get permission to do. Even when people think they have a right to the roads, they don't. They have a responsibility on the roads, but not a right to it. Because if anyone drives without a license, they'll know they don't have a right to it. We need permission for everything, but not God. The God of glory stands above and beyond anything you and I can ever know about him. And so he asks not your permission to act. He simply acts because he owns the world. It is his and his alone. So the scheme of this call was God's. I want you to see, my friends, when God calls, there's a severity to it. There is a severity to it. Listen to what he says in Genesis chapter 12. And the Lord had said to Abram, or Abraham, go forth from your own country, from your relatives, from your father's house, to a land which I will show you. You see, if God is God, he can make demands upon your life and mine that not even our spouse has the right to make.
There are times, my friends, when God has burst through history and he has spoken to people, and the severity of what he called them to do is such that no one really believes that God would be that, quote-unquote, cruel. He did it here. I want you to leave the one thing you know, the one place you know. It is the place where you're born, you have your relatives there. You know all the shortcuts in Ur. You know the secret places where you can go and get the best buys. You have insight into this place, and God invaded the privacy of Abraham's heart and said to him, I want you to leave it all. What an interesting thing. That when we see this God who is the God of love, we tend to think that he would never do anything to hurt us. We never think that he would do anything that is too difficult for us. He will always give us things to do that is within the confines of our ability to perform. But one of the elders reminded me this morning as I was sharing this with him, that God calls us to God-shaped things so that when the thing is fulfilled, it can only be attributed to the hand of God. The severity of his call. He has done this, my friends, to so many. He's called young men like Adoniah Judson to go to India. And his girlfriend said to him, if you go to India, you've got to choose between India and me, but not both of us. And he knew that within his heart that God had called him. And Judson could not get away from that. He did it, my friends, to Eric Liddell, the runner. His sister said to him, do you have to give so much of your time? And do you have to run with such energy? He said, God has made me fast. And when I run, I feel his presence. And when everyone said to him, why don't you use it for your country? He said, God has called me to something else. God has called me to something else. The hymn writer has a way of putting this. He said, God moves in a mysterious way his wonders to perform. There is a scheme that is all God's. There is, my friends, this movement of God that affects our daily lives when we walk with him. There is a severity to it. Sometimes it is hard. Jesus, the loving Christ, looked at men whose business was firm, settled, understood, appreciated, and he said, leave it all and follow me. But I want you to see the strangeness of this call. What was strange about it is that God called Abraham and didn't tell him where he would send him. I will show you. Now, if there's one thing I don't like uncertainty. But Oswald Chambers has helped me in this. He said, you and I, as we follow God, must learn the certainty of God in the midst of the uncertainties of life. When all around my life gives way, he then is all my hope and stay. What is strange about this call is that God didn't give Abraham a blueprint. By the way, I think Campus Crusade is doing a wonderful work. But no one went to Abraham and told him, God has a wonderful plan for your life. Because if Abraham, when he was going through, first of all, I want to know what that plan is. You see, my friends, in Ur of the Chaldees, everything was seen, measured, touched, humanly understood. And God said to Abraham, I want you to give up everything you can taste, everything you can touch, everything you can see, and I want you to follow me. I want you to walk by
faith. And the strange thing about this is that we as human beings just love to have a game plan. We just love to make sure that we can go to our day timer and our whole lives are mapped out for a day. I think of what the doctor said to my mother-in-law a few weeks ago. Your husband has about 5 to 10 months to live. And so Lois and I are getting prepared to go down to Oregon in July to celebrate Dad's 80th birthday. He only lived for 2 more weeks. Strange. But you want to see what strangeness is? You want to see the strangeness of God's call? Here's a classic example. God called Joseph from the farm and trained him to live in a palace. He called Moses from the palace and trained him in the wilderness to live on a farm. That's the strangeness of God's call. My friends, let me suggest to you, if you understand God, you are God. I think it was this whole thing that caused James Dobson to write the book, When God Doesn't Make Sense. Because when you walk by sight, nothing God does makes sense unless he sends the rain when we want it, the sun when we want it, and so on and so on and so on. And so this call toward the future was a scheme of God. There was a severity from God. And my friends, there was the strangeness of his call. The strangeness of his call. Someone put it this way, as I was reading, God moves in a mysterious way he's wanted us to perform. Now listen to how he does it. He plants his footsteps in the sea and rides upon the storms. Figure that one out. You see, God is not to be manipulated by human experience or human comfort or human desire. Even when we acknowledge him in all our ways, he directs us in the outcome. The strangeness of God's call. But I want you to see how Abraham confronted the future. Confronted the future. How did he do this? Genesis chapter 12, verses 4 to 8. Look, if you please, in verse 4. So Abraham went forth as the Lord had spoken to him. Abraham went forth. You know what Hebrews 11:8 says? Hebrews 11:8 said this. He went out not knowing where he was going. Some of you are in this building this morning are astute businessmen. Which of you would start a business like that? He went out not knowing where he was going. Can you imagine? Just picture this. Can you imagine this? Abraham goes home. He begins to pack up. He begins to take the pictures from off the wall. He begins to put his clothes together. He begins to take the knives and the forks out of the cupboard, put them in a place, and he buys boxes from Canadian Tire someplace. And Sarah looks at him and says, what are you doing? What are you doing? Now listen, this is a place, my friends, where people live by sight, where people live by taste, where people live by touch in raw idolatry. And Abraham said, God told me to move. Oh man, I don't know if they had ambulances in those days. God told me to move. First of all, who is God? This had to be a question. Because the gods of the Chaldees, my friends, didn't speak. They sat
on their porches or the wherever they had them, with a stern look, a frightening look. And they never say anything to those who worship them. But this God that Abraham is talking about is a God who communicates, who speaks. So, okay, God told you. Where is God leading you? I don't know. Honey, we don't do things like that. What are we going to do? How in the world can you uproot everything? What kind of a God would ask you to uproot everything and send you to a place you don't even know? I'll tell you what he did. He gave me some stupendous promises. He told me things in my ear I never thought it was possible for a human being to hear. Do you know, Sarah, I know that we don't have any children. And perhaps we never will. But I want to tell you what God told me. God said, I am going to make you the father of nations. I will make you a great leader. I will bless you. I will go with you so that if anyone blesses you, it will be to their benefit. And if anyone curses you, it will be to their curse. I can just imagine what was going on in Sarah's mind. The man has lost it. Something has gone wrong. Let me tell you, friends. Jesus says in John 10:4, and when he put forth his own sheep, he goes before them because his sheep know his voice. I want you to follow this thread with me. Abraham had a visitation from God, and God said, I am going to bless you. I'm going to give you some promises on which you will go, and you, when you get there, you will know, but you have to begin with one little step of obedience. One little step. And God said, I want you to go standing on the promises. I want you to go standing on the promises. I remember when I was coming into Canada almost 40 years ago. I was still living back in Central America. And I got a note from the Customs Canada. And the note said, the time is too short to give you permission to come, but come at your own risk. You may be turned back at the border, or you may be allowed to go in. I'm traveling all by myself. And I always remember the day I left. The day I left, it was 65 above, and we were freezing. Because we had never seen temperature that low before. When I got to Alberta, -22 degrees below zero, a blizzard you couldn't see. You couldn't see 2 feet ahead of you. And I thought, this is madness. I did. I thought... I was standing in that place, all these hundreds and hundreds of students, and I thought, I want my mother. I did. Never been away from my mom before. So I went to the phone booth, and I said, operator, can you tell me how much it costs to make a phone call to British Honduras in Central America? And she said, just a moment, please. And then she came with a price, and my homesickness abated. I had only one promise, and the promise was that God had called me. And I remember driving in the bus, coming to the border, Emerson, Manitoba,
I started to shake in my boots. I'm worried now. What will happen when I get to the border? I don't have permission to get in. And if I have to go back, where in the world? How do I go in the first place? What do you do from Emerson, Manitoba? They took us off the bus. I was traveling by Greyhound. I've done my time on buses, let me tell you. As I got to the border, I went into a little room. I spoke with a fellow. I told him what it was. And he said, listen, you don't have permission to go in, but listen, go in, and when you get to Three Hills, this is what I want you to do. And he gave me instructions as to what I was supposed to do. I was all alone. But my friends, there was a promise. There was a promise that God had called. And he was directing my life. And I'll share with you a moment what happened on the journey. And there are times when we have nothing but his promise to go by. I know the thoughts that I have towards you. Thoughts of peace and not of evil to give you an end of expectation. And I can face the future when I know the promises of God, because his promises are sure, because he's trustworthy. The promises. Isaac Watts wrote a hymn. His very word of grace is strong as that which builds the skies. The voice that rolls the stars along speaks all the promises. And in a world like ours, my friends, we don't do things like this. But God still calls his people to live by faith and not by sight. And when you live by faith, the only way you support your faith is with the promises of God. And we face the future with it, because his promises can never fail. Look at the sublimeness in his progress. I use the word sublime deliberately, because the word sublime means to have an outstanding spiritual, intellectual, and moral worth. And look, if you please, in verse 5 of our text. Abraham took Sarah, his wife, Sarai she was called at the time, and Lot, his nephew. There's something else in that I won't get into right now. But look at verse 6. And Abraham passed through the land as far as the site of Shechem, to the oak of Moreh. Now the Canaanites was in the land. Abraham passed through. Passing through, my friends, means that he was on a journey. He was a pilgrim and a stranger. He didn't know any of those places he was passing through. He had never traveled outside of Ur before. And here he is now. He's passing through. He's going through experiences. He's meeting new challenges, new encounters. But how could he keep going in spite of all those things? The voice that called him, the promises he was given. I used to get a little bit, whenever someone said, the Lord told me, But my friends, we can check to see if the Lord really tells us or not. Because God never tells us to do anything that contradicts his word. But he does speak to us. He says that his sheep knows his voice. And when you abide in this word, he says you can speak to him because he speaks to you. This morning early, I was reading Isaiah 55, 56, 57. And as I read those chapters early in the morning, it was almost, my friends, like the two on the road to Emmaus, did not our hearts burn within us? You see, God's word is alive. And when we take it for what it says, then, my friends, he speaks to our hearts as we journey through the direction he leads, even though we don't know where it will end. So here's the sublime progress. He went through, and he could not walk by sight in a place where they live by sight. He went through in a place where the gods were visible and the God who called him was invisible. How can he be sure that God was the one leading him? As I traveled from Emerson, Manitoba, I was on my way to three hills, and I had to go through a place called Saskatchewan. Now, between Saskatchewan, no, I better not say, there might be people here from Saskatchewan. Yeah. Ain't much out there. Someone says if you take a quarter and roll it from Swift Current, you see it all the way to Calgary. Flat land. I didn't know anything about Banff. Never heard of it before. And as I was traveling, I was in a bus, sitting in a bus. And now, this was the early 60s. The early 60s with all the troubles between blacks and whites in the United States were going around. So I heard certain things, so I took some precautions. So I just went and sat in the back of the bus. Going through. I'm afraid to get off the bus at certain points because I wasn't too sure about the schedule. So I got off as the bus is going, I became extremely, extremely hungry. And I whispered in my heart, I said, "Dear Lord, I am hungry." And I no sooner said that, a fellow behind me said, "Would you like a sandwich?" That's the truth. The journey. He passed through and he had the voice to go by. And when he got there, he will know. I got into the city of Calgary. Oh, it was snowing. It was snowing. And as I got, I must have looked like a wet penguin or something. I don't know. A fellow dressed in black. All I can remember is that he was dressed in black. And he came to me and he said, "Can I help you?" And I said to him, "I am looking for Bob Orr." He said, "Where does he live?" I said, "I don't know." "Where does he work?" I said, "I don't know." The guy was about, "Pity this poor guy." And he said, "Where does he work?" I said, "I know that he's taking flying lessons somewhere around here." Now, when I became a Christian, Bob Orr and another fellow by the name of Herb Ristow drove down to where I was born, and they worked for the summer. They were getting ready to go to a missionary service, and they wanted to get a taste of another place. And they drove down to where I was born, and they worked in the church I started to attend. So I knew that he was taking aviation lessons. So I said to this fellow that he's taking flying lessons somewhere in Calgary. "Do you know the name of the place?" "No." And I can see him now, pushing his hands in his pocket, and he pulled out enough money to go to the phone and called every aviation school in Calgary until he got to Bob Orr. And Bob came and got me. As he passed through, for Abraham, my friends, each step of the way was that voice will maintain me. That voice will not fail me. That voice will not disappoint me. And he passed through. What's the experience from Shechem to Moreh? It has significance. It is saying that Abraham had experiences that challenged his obedience, but he knew the voice that called him, and he would not deviate from it. You remember the Lucy peanut cartoons we used to see? Lucy his friend. Every time Lucy would hold a ball for him to kick, what did Lucy do? She'd move it. And he missed it every time. And sometimes he felt, "I can't trust Lucy anymore." My friends, God never disappointed Abraham as he moved from Ur to Shechem, to Moreh, to the place where he was leading him. He still didn't have any word from God. "Where do I go?" The sublimity of it, you see, each step of the way strengthened his faith. Each step of the way, he provided for him to keep hearing that voice.
Because that was the voice that was carrying him along. And when he put forth his own sheep, he goes before them because his sheep knows his voice. And we need to sharpen our spiritual life, my friends, so that we can discern the voice of God in the midst of all the noises of the world in which we live. Because we are called to walk by faith and not by sight. He had the promises of God in which he was standing. He had the sublime progress sustained by those promises. And then I'll be brief with this. Look, if you please, in verse 7. And the Lord appeared to Abraham, or Abram as it says there at the moment. And listen to what he says. This is the place. When we arrive at the future, whatever it is, tomorrow, day after, whatever it may be, my friends, when we are following God, He will vindicate our obedience by His appearance to us in ways that you and I do not know. The Lord appeared. He had the sovereign presence of God. This is the first time in the entire Bible that this phrase, the Lord appeared, is seen. I spent almost a day trying to work my mind around or into this. What does it mean that the Lord appeared? Here is the lesson. Abraham didn't see God. God made himself clear to Abraham. That's significant. Because you see, my friends, faith does not manipulate God. Faith doesn't say that I can come and go and do whatever I want because I belong to Him. No, faith can trust God in the trenches, whatever the situations might be, being hungry in a bus, being lost in a bus depot. You can trust Him because you know that voice that has called you, and you can stay the course because you're being carried along. And at the end of it, God appeared to Abraham. He made Himself known. This is exciting for me, and it should be for you as well. Whatever your future is, whatever my future is, at the end of it, as we follow Him, as we're obedient to Him, my friends, He will make Himself known to us, and He will say, this is it. He will say it. He has not abandoned us. And He won't do that. I close with the words of Dr. E.M. Blakelock. He says, I commend to you the story of the man who, in faith, was called out of Ur of the Chaldees to found a nation, who in faith found that he could trust God to plan his life and lead him step by step, who found that even his mistakes could be used by God when repented of and consecrated to his matchless hands, because he could, listen to this, he could weave the beauty out of the ugliness. And by faith, Abraham stepped out, and he left much in Ur, but he found much more in the place God called him to. The crew of Apollo 13 abandoned themselves to whatever Houston would say. I have a one that's a lot better. May the crew of Markham Missionary Church leave the future into the one who says, I will build my church, and the gates of hell will never prevail against it.